Eureka! You found us! Welcome to the Check Out California Radio Show, your key to California hospitality. Hosted by Rad Gantos, principal of Rad Gantos & Associates, a hospitality and commercial real estate design firm, and Craig Sullivan, executive vice president of ParkWest GC, a hospitality and commercial real estate general contractor. Check Out California is focused on our state's hospitality, travel, and tourism markets, and on the large part they play in California's vibrant and innovative economic diversity and unique quality of life. Now, here are your hosts, Rad Gantos and Craig Sullivan.
Good afternoon. I'm Craig Sullivan.
And I'm Rad Gantos.
And this is Check Out California. We've got a very special guest with us today, my cousin. We've got Mr. Stephen Medell from Pacifica Hotels. How are you, cuz? Welcome.
Doing fantastic. Pleasure to be here. Thanks.
Oh, thank you for being here. Why don't you give our audience a little bit of your Reader's Digest bio?
Oh, gosh. Got started in the industry at the young age of 19 years old.
He's only 22 now.
I'm only 22, so it's, yeah, for those of you who are doing math. So it's, I'm coming up on 20 years, which is pretty amazing. Came to the industry with no bad habits, had never worked hospitality.
Well, that didn't last long.
Well, but got my start in Five Diamond, and, you know, which was pretty amazing because every day we felt like we were on stage. So got to do a little bit of everything. Right. Everything from checking guests in to concierge to delivering food to
making beds,
turn down service. You name it. It was a really a great crash course into the hospitality industry. Fast forward a few years, started working under somebody who I know has been on this show as well, Larry Broughton with Broughton Hospitality. In the very, very early years, I think I was employee number 3. At the time, only had 4 hotels, but we grew that over the 12 years that I was there. We acquired about 20 hotels in the time that I was there, learned a ton.
Yeah.
Getting to work under Larry and getting to do a lot and learn a lot in the dozen years that I was there. So got to cut my teeth in operations, which was great. Fast forwarding to now, more of an acquisitions and on the real estate side as the vice president of business development with Pacifica Hotels, which is where I've been now for coming up on 4 years.
It's been that long.
Time flies by. Having a great time doing a lot of exciting projects. You know, Pacifica Hotels is, I believe, the largest owner and operator of coastal hotels in California. We have a portfolio of 36 hotels now, most of which are in the state of California, most of which are oceanfront. Looking forward to sharing more of that, you know, here today. But yeah, we've got some exciting projects that we're working on. Like I said, most of which are in California.
You dominate the Central Coast. You guys have got a ton of beautiful assets up
there. We do.
Marina Del Rey and various other areas in California. Santa Monica, you're managing one there.
That's right. Everything from San Diego all the way up to Half Moon Bay is our furthest north property. We have an outlier out in Florida. We have a Hilton Garden Inn that we built many years ago in Port St. Lucie, Florida, in a relationship with the PGA. And then we have 2 out in Hawaii, which Hawaii continues to be an exciting place regardless of volcanoes or fissures. It's still an amazing place to go. In fact, you know, some might say even more exciting now.
It's just a remodel.
Yeah.
The island is just remodeling.
Listen,
it's a real estate expansion. That's what it is.
It's growing. You show me another place where they're building more oceanfront property, I tell you to invest there.
Exactly.
But it's an exciting place to be. And so we have 2 assets there out in Hawaii and looking to grow our footprint out in the islands as well.
There you go.
What are some of the properties, since we are out of Orange County, or if you want to do L.A. or San Diego, what are some of the key properties?
Oh, gosh. And, you know, I think when people think of Pacifica and they think of who we are, first, there's a lot of iterations of the name of our company.
Yes.
But when people think of Pacifica, they think of the deep history and the roots that were in Santa Barbara. Mm-hmm. And many of those in the company really starting kind of along the Central Coast, as Craig was alluding to. I think when they think of Pacifica, certainly though in the Los Angeles area, because it's probably of the greatest visibility, you can't help but notice hotels like the Marina Del Rey Hotel,
right?
Which we opened. We've owned the hotel for now, gosh, 10 years, but we opened it January of 2015, and it's really been a tremendous turnaround. When you talk about turnaround stories and the case studies that we've gathered, you know, over the years. That's a fantastic story.
Yeah.
160 rooms with an amazing restaurant that sits right there at the edge of the water in Marina Del Rey. A great story. Yeah. And a great story and a great example for what we do best as a company. Finding underperforming hotels mm-hmm. where we can bring value, not only from operations, but from design, from concept, and everything that we can do for a property. That's a great one. And that's an asset that we both own and manage. To hotels where we just manage third party, which would be an asset like the Georgian Hotel in Santa Monica, which is going through a massive renovation right now as we've launched the ground floor 1933 true authentic speakeasy, which is really exciting. Jamaica Bay Inn, which is another hotel in Marina Del Rey, but hotels that we're really excited about is properties like the Wayfair, which is one that we have in Santa Barbara, doing a second Wayfair in downtown Los Angeles at 8th and Flower, just a few short blocks from LA Live. And LA, gosh, talk about a
hotbed of activity. Let's talk about the Kenny and the Wayfair. You know, you've been posting some amazing pictures of the Wayfair.
It photographs well.
It does. I mean, following the construction, you guys doing the social media on that has really been fun. I don't say too much social media is fun, but, you know, that rooftop bar and pool is looking really nice. And
yeah.
Why don't you tell us about the creation of that?
Yeah, so that's exciting. So the first Wayfair started in Santa Barbara. We acquired a property in 2013, which was an abandoned project that had to follow the international hostel standards kind of guideline book. And so we took that language and we said, okay, city, what do you want it to be? And we inherited the architecture, but created the DNA. And the DNA, what was born, was Wayfair, which is a phenomenal concept that really marries both hostel and hotel. So what we like to call it is it's a boutique hotel with the soul of a hostel. Mm-hmm. Originally, the thought was, oh, let's find other 30 to 50 room hotels that we could convert where we have both your typical. When I say typical, it's atypical, but where you have traditional hotel rooms, where you have private rooms, but then where we have less than 10% of the total key count being these shared accommodation bunk rooms, mm-hmm. Where now individuals who are traveling alone can do so without ever being lonely. But what we've created with Wayfair is really that space where individual travelers, adventurers, wayfarers, the term wayfarer means travel by foot.
Right.
And so we wanted to create locations where people, whether they were traveling by car, traveling by rail, as a lot of people today, they're flying, they get an Uber, they don't have a car. We want people to be at the city center and the epicenter of everything that is great about a location. So we're expanding that. So where we thought it was just going to be 30 to 50 room hotels, downtown LA is going to be 156 rooms.
Wow.
8th and Flower. It was an existing building. We bought the old Ritz Milner Hotel that had been standing for, oh gosh, the hotel was originally built. The building was built in the early 1900s. So we get some great history there. We also have to deal with some historical preservation. But talk about an exciting project. So yes, it will have a rooftop deck with a small pool. It'll have fantastic guest rooms, a great lobby with a lobby food and beverage concept that also will feature our kind of signature communal kitchen for that location, where now our guests get to play host. That's one of the most exciting things I think about Wayfair, is where our guests not only are being hosted by our staff, but now the guest gets to play host, cook food, and share a piece of themselves, share their grandma's favorite recipe of macaroni and cheese, share something they bought down the street at Whole Foods and prepare it in our communal kitchen, and now share it with other guests that maybe they just met an hour beforehand.
That's awesome.
That's a pretty amazing point.
That's cool.
Point.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
And then we're going to have a great speakeasy, true authentic speakeasy in the ground floor of that as well. And we're going to be having a lot of fun with that.
Yeah.
So excited to bring Wayfair to downtown LA. We're going to learn a lot. Great to see that we're not the only ones doing shared accommodations in downtown LA. Love to see other people helping bring visibility to the shared accommodation space. Because let's face it, a lot of people, if you've never stayed in a hostel, I have no idea what you think. You know, they might be thinking that they're going to lose their kidneys in the middle of the night, you know, depending on what movies they watch. If you've traveled throughout Europe and you've traveled, you know, whether you backpacked or what, you probably stayed in a hostel. And your experience may not have been a good one.
Yeah.
So love the fact that there's other people in the space, Sidell with Freehand. There's some other great concepts that are coming around. Now, look, the brands are embracing it. You know, you see Moxies, Marriott embracing it now, and you see Moxies with bunk-bedded rooms. In Midtown Manhattan. So I got to believe, and we knew it, we kind of had lightning in a bottle back in 2014 when we were launching this thing, and we said, you know what, we've got something here.
Yeah.
And it did, and for good reason, you see some of the big brands now trying to adopt that same,
absolutely,
that same idea. That's quite all right.
I wanted to get you two guys together. We were supposed to have both of you on the other week about NYU.
Last time around. Ned had a problem then, too. Right?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. But he was in a meeting. Oh. So this was technical. This was on our side.
So here's the interesting thing, right? I mean, hostels are not something that's foreign to me. I spent a lot of time overseas. I grew up overseas. I spent a lot of time in Europe. The idea of it doesn't worry me. But it's usually driven by some reason for travel. It's driven by some destination draw. There's something that causes you to say, I'm okay with this type of accommodation because I'm traveling light, I am going for a period of time, I'm already in sort of a communal mindset, right? And I see that in a surf culture. I see that in like places like, you know, El Salvador. I see that in Costa Rica. I see that idea basically being very fluid, right? And you could dress it up and you could add a bunch of amenities to it and it just becomes even a better and a better offering, right? Explain to me why it works in downtown LA. And I kind of have an idea why, and it may have nothing to do with what I just said, right? But those, or when you
tell
said, when you said, when you said Manhattan. No, but you said Manhattan. I mean, the point is there's realities of life today in certain places that are driving this into a viability.
Right.
Right?
I think, so let's talk about the markets where we are now. Santa Barbara, which is an international destination. Yeah. Santa Barbara is also greatly fueled by leisure travel.
Absolutely.
And you have individuals who go to Santa Barbara, and we have if I could have written a case study of who I thought would be staying there, I've interviewed these people and they don't know who I am. I've stayed in the shared accommodation rooms and bunked with absolute strangers, and I show up in my backpack and a hoodie, and I sleep in these rooms with other people, and we talk about our experiences. These are everybody from students to people who say, I just want to travel the world, and I don't want to be slowed down by male or female. I want to do what I want to do when I want to do it on my own time. And what we've provided for them through us as a Wayfair, or you name the other concept that's doing it, what we create is this great environment where guests, it's almost the anti-hostel, where they don't want to stay in an Airbnb because what the Airbnb lacks is communal entertainment.
Absolutely.
And
what
we're providing with Wayfair is exactly that.
Yeah.
We're providing a space where if a guy shows up without a car, we provide bicycles. We are the city center, and we curate experiences for those people to feel and live like a local. And that's one of our tags. We want the people, when they're here, and for our ambassadors, our front desk hosts, which we like to call ambassadors, to be an extension of that city. And I don't care if that if that person grew up in the city, or they've been in college, but they bleed the essence of that city. Please don't tell me at 2 a.m. when I'm hungry and I just got in, the only place to go eat is Denny's. Mm-hmm. Tell me the hole-in-the-wall taco shop down the street that I can go to get the best taco. Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Late night. Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't send me to Denny's.
No,
don't
That other 24-hour restaurant, yeah.
So that's what we want. We want staff to give our guests the key to the city, whether they're with us for a day or whether they're with us for a week. And believe me, we have all of that. And it isn't just young travelers. It's all ranges. Because of where we're located in Santa Barbara, because of where we're located in LA. Now, keep in mind, LA is not open yet. So we'll test this. Let's revisit this. It'd be fun to come back.
Would like to see that. Because I think it's very experimental, especially with this expanded offering right now. And it's very exciting. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's a laboratory component to it. And
absolutely.
And it's going to be interesting to see the scalability of this model.
Yeah, right. I completely agree.
And who really is going to be able to pull it off? I mean, if the major chains actually embrace this, is it within their DNA to actually deliver on this? Because what you are doing is, and you use the right exact words, is you're curating personalized experience, but you're also allowing the individual input into that personalized experience from the people they're staying. And age factor is not a big deal because the person who basically backpacked through Europe 40 years ago is maybe now a single person or a divorcee or a widower that basically is trying to recapture the youth and have their health and ability to do it, have the means that are more than when they were basically...
Are you talking about a second childhood?
Yes.
Yeah, it almost is. Listen, there's this rebirth and nostalgia with it as well.
Absolutely.
So what you remember what you did is when you're 20, you come back again and do it as 60 and do it in downtown LA in a city that when you were 20, you would have said, hell no, I'm not going to downtown LA.
Exactly.
Fast forward 40 years now when you're retired and you have the means and the means and ways and you say, I'm going to visit downtown LA as an adult. I can absolutely afford $250 a night in downtown LA and get a... But what I want is that experience.
That doesn't give you. That gives you a very sanitized existence.
Wayfair. We're going to talk about this. Wayfair is for the adventurer. It's for the well-traveled person. It's the person who wants to go out and adventure and experience life.
Yeah.
It's for the person who says, you know, I've traveled the world. I've done this and I've done that, and I gather experiences and I collect them and I take them with me.
With me. Yeah.
I share them with other people. You show me another hotel that does that, and that's where I think where we're becoming innovators in this space. And it's. Not going to toot our own horn, but it's something that I think we're doing with Wayfair, and we're going to be able to do and pull it off really, really well.
Well, hold on to that thought for a minute, because I want to ask you about being an innovator and being a disruptor.
Okay.
So, but we've got Ned DeLorme on the phone now. Ned.
Yes.
How are you?
Speaking of disruptor.
Anti-disruptor.
Hey, we finally got you on. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
We got Steven in the studio with us.
Hey, Ned.
Weren't lucky enough to get you on the phone the other week when you were in New York at NYU. So I'd like to get you guys to talk a little bit right now before we're going more into depth into Pacifica. Let's hear your thoughts on the NYU conference.
How innovative and disruptive was it?
I think, how innovative and disruptive. you know, for me, obviously...
Not in your wallet.
Chance to get back and see you know, old partners, new partners, existing partners, and see what's going on in the market. But this year was very the sense I got was a lot of optimism. People are definitely interested in buying. People are interested in building. We are very busy working on a lot of construction deals. There is money available, but it's difficult. If you don't have the right location, the right flag, and all of the other good things.
Well, speaking of these construction loans, typically, you know, what is it, 55-65% loan to cost? And are there continuing guarantees? Are they burning off? What are you doing on the loan side?
On the larger deals, for the few national construction lenders that are out there, you're looking at somewhere between 50% and 60% loan to cost. We have a couple of groups that'll fill in on a great deal up to, you know, say 80% of cost if you need to or want to leverage it that high. The deal's got to be pretty good, obviously. I think most of the banks have pulled back. A lot of them have already decided that they're not going to allocate any more money to the hotel space. You know, you're competing against what they perceive to be very liquid markets in multifamily, and that's always tough. Mm-hmm. But it's still out there. The projects have to be well conceived and, as I said, well located. So those are still challenges. But on the other hand, there's plenty of money out there to buy them. The institutions are busy. You know, the high net worth guys are busy. Everybody's looking. I think yield expectations are perhaps lower than they were a year ago. People are willing to pay up a little more. So, you know, I would kind of characterize it as a seller's market if you've got something that's a great property.
I'll tell that to the guys that just sold the Barclay downtown LA. It was on the market for 2 years, and they sold it for less than half what they bought it for.
So,
I mean, there's always the exception to the rule, but I mean, you look at it.
Timing is everything.
Yeah, I mean, look at Stephen's company and, you know, what they're doing, especially, you know, the downtown LA market right now. You know, and you know, Stephen, give us some more of your thoughts on NYU. What were you thinking? What was the takeaway you came back to California with?
Oftentimes, you know, when I'm at these, we're at these conferences, and you're always looking for a couple of nuggets, like, okay, who was actually speaking the truth? Mm-hmm. And it's not always something that you hear in a seminar, which people are preparing in advance, or, you know, very, very, very rarely do you get banter mm-hmm. up there where right. people are challenging each other. That doesn't happen very often. But what I always try to gather is to kind of figure out on my own, you know, having done this now for a little while, is to figure out, where are we? Where are we in the cycle? Where yeah. are we in the process? We're trying to remind myself of, you know, the conversations that we're having now, Ned talking about lenders, the type of people that are getting approved for loans, the levels of what loans are being made at it. You know, you start talking about all the construction money. I'm hearing about all this construction money is out there for projects with people that the biggest concern is always, here's somebody who's never built a hotel before. They're getting a construction loan to right. do a project they Sponsors. May have no business yeah. doing. That starts to scare me. And that just starts to feel a lot reminiscent of what we were going through 10 years ago.
The word frothy come to mind?
F word with a capital F, right? And that becomes a concern, right? Yeah. So meeting with lender after lender, hearing about construction money being out there, I'm like, that's great. That's great for us because, listen, we're still developing hotels. With that being said, we also have, I think we're a great sponsor.
Yeah.
We have great
the
track
expertise,
record.
The track
we have
record,
expertise.
Everything.
We,
yeah.
you know, as a sponsor and as a borrower, we're a great fit.
Yeah.
Not only for smaller banks, but for larger institutions as well. So we don't necessarily have those challenges. But that's always kind of that's what I look for. And my biggest takeaway from NYU this year was, yes, still continued optimism, cautious optimism, I would say, as I shared a couple weeks ago. There's a lot of buyers and few sellers, which
right.
if I'm a seller, I love my position right now.
Yeah, yeah.
If I'm a buyer and I've got money to place, that's good too. And I'm hopeful that, from what we were hearing, I'm hopeful that the product is going to start to come available here in the next, you know, 1 to 2 months is what we were hearing.
All right. Hey, Ned, before you chime in on the same subject, Rad and I will take a 1-point referral fee if you do a loan with Stephen and Pacifica. So.
Oh, great. Thanks.
No pressure.
Really
Ned.
I mean.
So what were the nuggets you came away with, Ned?
Well, I think, you know, Stephen's made a good point. We're not seeing a lot. I'm seeing a lot of stupid deals, but I'm not seeing a lot of stupid deals get done. There's definitely people who have, as there always is in any part of the cycle, people who have some money, and even people who have a lot of money who don't know what the hell they're doing, and those guys will always be there. But for the most part, I would say the lenders and the investors are very disciplined, and they're very careful about what they're doing, and be very careful about, you know, branding, location, and most importantly, as Stephen said, experience. You know, certainly Wayfair knows what they're doing. Stephen's been in the business, that's critical, because if you don't have the experience, you better find somebody who does, because you're not going to get a deal done.
Definitely.
Our company's been around for 45 years. The great thing is, in that 45 years, literally we've seen six different cycles that the company has gone through,
right.
good, bad, or indifferent. And I think every single time you learn from them, you know, we've never handed, never
you
given
you
a project.
Have been around 45
never,
years.
Never given a project back.
So are we just being cautiously optimistic and cruising through, or are we actually still innovating?
Oh, no, I think both. I think in what you'll see is the people who learn from the past and can apply that will become some of the greatest innovators, because those are the people that have staying power. You can create something great for right now and get a great little kick for right. now. The true staying power comes where I create something that is for the long haul. I create something that has some long-term merit to it. Not just a flash in the pan idea that, hey, it sounded really cool.
At the time.
You know, there's a lot of, let's use technology, for example.
Right.
There's so much great technology
great
that's out there right now. And we see it all the time, from handheld tools that you want to put in the hands of every single member at your hotel. And if I'm the technology company with the VC money behind it, I'm saying, oh my gosh, why wouldn't you embrace this? This is fantastic tech. It makes communication that much faster. You're able to deliver this to the... Then I put my operational hat on for a moment, and I say, tech company, we don't pay for everybody's cell phone. Mm-hmm. And you want us to... If you provided some sort of a cell phone plan where we can now provide every single member of the hotel with a cell phone at a reasonable cost, sure, maybe that makes some sense. But
right.
I can't ask my, you know, engineer who isn't a salaried engineer person to use his flip phone maybe to download an app. That person's not going to do it, even if it even if it's going to cut their workload down. You can't make that have that expectation.
You can't make that jump.
It's even funny. It's funny not only just on the operations side. It's also on the amenity provision for the customer. Okay, I had a conversation last week where it was basically trying to put an iPad in the hands of everybody as part of the walkthrough experience, the transition through services, what have you, at a spa situation. Okay, where to put in an iPad, and the motivation was that it would be a platform through which you could have tested meditation tapes that you could then basically link into retail sales. So you give them a little teaser while they're waiting, all this stuff, right? What was interesting is nobody actually thought through this whole presentation that every one of those iPads has a camera on it, and you basically are about to hand cameras to people that are going to sit in a room with other people that are in nothing but ropes.
Yeah, right. Yeah, not good.
Imagine that.
Yeah, Ned's laughing.
Imagine that airdrop feature.
Minor detail.
I'm
going to be airdropping images of myself.
Everything is on a cloud, right? And everything is the property of the actual facility. I mean, I'm standing there, I'm listening to this, and they're all excited, and they're really pulling all the bells and whistles.
Yeah,
and I'm sitting there, and I go,
that's a bad idea.
Wait, but there's a camera on these things, right? And you could hear a pin drop.
Yeah.
It was like torpedoed the presentation. And there, I'm like,
sorry, guys.
Hate to be the buzzkill here. Yeah,
but here's where that embrace of technology is. Here's where the embrace of everything being, you know, remote and touchless and Wi-Fi and everything. If that means that my engineering department is now going to have to be staffed three times as deep in order to maintain everything, then what does that really do?
That's right.
Other than put yourself up in a position where you're likely to disappoint based on the expectations that you set, and now you basically are having a problem maintaining the experience.
Exactly.
And I really think that's the reason why that experience, this conversation, you know, face-to-face conversation that guests are always wanting, unless you are listen, there's people who travel, you know, 200 plus days out of the year, and for them it's all about efficiency.
Right.
But at the end of the day, when there is a service breakdown, I don't want a robot to fix my problem. I don't want the bots that you see in some hotels now delivering something to my room. I want somebody with compassion to show me I'm sorry, you know, listen, these mistakes happen. Please let us correct it. Please let us show you and make an extension of why we want you to continue to come back and tell people why do you stay at our hotel.
It's that personal touch.
And that bot's not going to do it. And that kiosk isn't going to do it. And so to me, and part of this is, you know, whatever, corny. Maybe this is part of my five diamond training coming back right up front again, where that guest interaction, you have two chances. You have the first, when that guest arrives and when that guest leaves. And if you don't, and if you don't nail it, both of those times, you know, you may have lost somebody.
Exactly.
And that's why I think at a valet, never overlook your valet stand.
Right.
You can't don't automate that experience, because all of a sudden you lose an opportunity to create a great touch point with a guest. And I'm not saying valet in all hotels. So some hotels it doesn't make sense, but with Kinney, for example, we see that touch point as an important one. Mm-hmm. And so Kinney, even though it's a 3.5-star hotel, and we're doing valet.
Yeah.
We're doing valet.
Well, let's touch on that hotel in a second. Hey, Ned, I want to thank you for calling in, and let me know when you're going to be back in the Southland, and if it's the first or third Wednesday of the month, we'll get you into the studio, okay?
Very good. We'll do it. Thanks much.
Thanks for calling in, Ned. Have a great day. Are we going to a commercial now? We're going to go to a commercial now, then we will be back with Cuz Steven Medell from Pacifica Hotels.
You're going to have to explain Cuz, you know, when we come back.
We will.
It's a good story, actually.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest. Higher.
When you use the Premier Rewards Gold Card from American Express, the rewards points can keep on multiplying. Buy three with triple points on airfare. Buy two with double points on gas and groceries. And a single point for pretty much every other dollar you spend on the card. Then, start choosing from over a million rewards to redeem all those points. Apply today and the annual fee for the first year is on us. Call 1-800-AXP-GOLD or visit AXPGold.com. The annual fee for the card is $175. See terms, conditions, and restrictions at AXPGold.com.
We're back. This is Craig Sullivan.
And Rod Gantis.
And we've got Stephen Medell, Vice President of Pacific Hotels, today on Check Out California.
I'm still here.
Yes, we locked the door.
You didn't scare me away that easy.
So we started this conversation about the Kenny Hotel. Why don't you describe that hotel and what you're doing with that particular property and where you're going with that to our audience.
Yeah, so the Kinney was a concept that we started in Venice Beach, rightfully so, right near the corner of Washington and Abbot Kinney, which, you know, for those of you who haven't been on Abbot Kinney lately, it's either because you're scared away by cool people and you know, the height of California, you know, hipsters and expensive restaurants. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
It's fantastic what's
that
going on in Abbot Kinney. It's incredible. So anyway, what we wanted to capture is capture the youthfulness, the art, and the culture of Venice. And we started that with the Kinney, Venice Beach, converting what was an old Holiday Inn Express, an old Best Western, an old Independent. And we said, what do we do with this box? What do we do with this hotel? So Kinney was born there. And after we finished it, we said, you know what? We think we got something else here, too. And so we're rolling out Kinney number two. And Kinney number two is going to be in San Luis Obispo, where we're also converting another hotel. And so that will be launching here third quarter of this year. Just a really fun hotel. You know, a hotel where we say, rally around your flag. You know, where we have, it's youthful. It's group-centric, localized with high energy. We create touch points in this hotel, like valet parking, because we recognize that touch point, when a guest first arrives, it's this unexpected, almost, oh, I didn't pay $300 a night, but I'm valet parking my car, and it's at a value.
Right.
So at Pacifica, everything that we do, it's all got to be ROI-based.
Yeah.
It's the question that we ask, where's the ROI on that? Where's the ROI on that? Where's the ROI on that? Almost to the point where it just becomes redundant, but it's because we want to make sure that there's a reason and that there's intent for some of this stuff. And with what we're doing with Kinney, it's really a fun hotel. And for those of you who only remember it as our old, you know, as the old Inn at Marina Del Rey, you know, it's get down there to Venice Beach. Venice Beach isn't all grungy anymore. Venice Beach is really getting cleaned up, and that's an exciting time down there. But Kinney is a fun place. It's different than Wayfair, where I'd say Wayfair is for that adventurer, the person who's well traveled, the person who might be traveling alone. Now listen, we have a lot of corporate travel. Think about who's all in Venice Beach now. You've got Google, you've got Snap, you have everything there in Silicon Beach, where we could never tap in as an independent hotel, just a plain Jane independent. We could never tap that corporate travel.
Yeah.
We switched to the Kinney. We became cool. We had this great artful experience with amazing murals, and we feature art from LA-based muralist Robert Vargas, who's done some incredible art installations at the hotel. All of a sudden, we get corporate travel, just like that. The same box, same location, obviously different design and different DNA, but all of a sudden that corporate travel, that Snap traveler, that you know, people coming into the Silicon Beach there want to stay at the property. That's great. That feels good.
See, now I think that gets back to your earlier statement. We ask, what's the ROI on that? That's one of the things I think that you and your company do so well. Okay, you're trying to monetize every square inch without being obnoxious about it to your guests. You're trying to create an experience. So, yeah, and again, that's one of the many things that you and Pacifica do extremely well. And you create this experience.
Thank you.
You create this And those touch points are really, you and I have been to hotels where, you know, the valet is almost non-existent. And it's almost, okay, I've got the buyer's remorse now getting out of my car before I've even gotten to the front desk. And, you know, what used to be the lobby is now the living room, and it's changed, and it may be nice, but all of a sudden my vision is impaired because of the lack of that touch point when I first arrived and got out of my car.
We've said this before, right? I mean, somewhere along the way, the word hospitality fell out of hospitality.
Yeah. You got McDonald's.
And it basically became this sort of cookie cutter, repetitive, in a neat box, handed out to everybody with the caveat that it's one-on-one customer service. And how can it be one-on-one customer service when you're prepackaging exactly the same thing and delivering it? Mm-hmm. You know, you have an option A, option B, or option C. You want the blue, the green, or the red, right? Mm-hmm. But it's pretty much the same box.
It's becoming prescriptive.
It's very much like that. You're being issued a prescription for your stay. And something like, you know, we're talking
about
some
of us should be medicated.
Well, some of us, yes, should be, but that's a different show for another day. But, you know, I mean, valet is a very, very good point, right? It's something that may be considered by many that are looking only at the quantifiable numbers per se, mm-hmm. and in a very myopic way is got X value. But it has a lot of other incidental value that can easily be quantified if your vision on what makes value for your property is bigger.
That's right.
And that's really where I think a lot of the failure happens. And you see that happening on large properties and on small properties. Yeah. And especially if you have a repetitive person. I mean the name of the game is to have repeat business, right?
That's right.
So if the valet person basically is the kind of caliber of person that you have there, you know, or the lead in the valet pool, one or two of them, they remember that person. They ask that person. You know, I mean, I went back to a property today that I had been going to quite a bit over the last year doing some work here in South Orange County. And I went there and I had not been there for a little bit. And there was an instantaneous, very personalized greeting that happened. And that was before I even stepped out of my car.
Yeah.
Right? And that has a very much a quantifiable add value to that experience on that property.
Absolutely.
That when I basically am thinking about, well, where am I going to take my dad for Father's Day? I'm going to think, well, I'm going to go there.
Totally.
Right?
Yeah.
And that translates directly into cover, translates into a bar bill, translates into possible stay, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. And more importantly, I'm going to go basically and tell somebody else about what I that shared mm-hmm. that experience that was a unique experience for me, and basically say you're more likely to get that too if you go over there.
Right.
So the myopic nature of some of the stuff when it happens in hospitality, not only is it non-creative, it's almost anti-success of the brand. And that's why I keep asking the question whenever I hear about, oh, we're good, we're fine, the industry's great, you know, we're just coasting, everything is great, it's all gravy.
You're never coasting.
I've been there, right? And there's a part of me that's just a little bit of a contrarian and a disruptor too. And I'm always like, okay, are we resting on our laurels? Are we still pushing? Are we taking advantage of the fact that things are great to actually risk or not?
I think when we can, as hoteliers, I think when we can, when there's other these disruptors and great innovators in our space, I think when we challenge, when our comfortability is challenged in our space, that's when we have the greatest opportunity. When we say,
you're right,
we're going to challenge the status quo, we're going to challenge what other people are doing all around us just because everybody else is successful, that's when I think you see the greatest innovation. Craig and I were talking about OTA space. You know, I if it wasn't for the OTAs, what would we – listen, that – might have been a necessary evil in our industry.
Online travel agencies have been that double-headed monster.
It forced hotels to stop resting, independent or branded.
Right.
It forced us to stop resting on our laurels on how do we attract our guests and how do we keep our guests.
Yep.
There is a certain population of travelers who aren't driven by loyalty.
Right.
Loyalty is a dollar symbol to them. So now I'm a hotel who says whether independent hotels, there was a study out that said guests are more loyal to independent boutique hotels than they are their branded counterparts. Well, guess what? There's a whole generation of people right now who says, I don't give two about that anymore. It's about price.
Yeah.
And you have these brands that are trying to create product to go after them. You have reward platforms that are dedicated now to people that speak more to their what's in my heart, not just what's in my pocketbook. It's forced us all to really get outside that comfort zone.
This is one of the things I've always liked about Stephen is his passion. You can hear it coming across. You can see it if you're
coffee.
on YouTube or Facebook Live.
I don't think this
and,
is coffee.
You know, it's not coffee. He's always this way. And you know, well, it's refreshing. It's energizing. It's authentic. And that was one of the reasons why I wanted...
In an overly curated world that we live in today, words like authentic, words like risk, words like vulnerability, soul, those are things that are differentiators, because we live in an over friggin' curated world where everything is rosy and everything is perfect and everything is great and nothing goes wrong, right? And if it does go wrong, then my expectations of reality is that it shouldn't, and I have a really angry reaction to it, right? But in the course of that, we have sold away this sort of unique individual experience that we can have, because we're all going to be just... I mean, I saw an article yesterday that I found fascinating. How many years ago was it that we actually were even introduced to the term influencer?
Hmm.
Right? It wasn't that long ago, right? Mm-hmm. Less than 10 years ago, the word influencer and people basically being paid, you know, to be that Twitter influencer or whatever, right, to put those stuff out, to do a Yelp review, to do a travel review, whatever, right? There's articles now about influencer fraud. In less than 10 years of that thing, right? Because we have become so inundated with influencers, so inundated with noise, that now there's fraudulent influencers that are happening.
Now you start second guessing who you thought you were.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Where do you source your content? Yeah. You know, whether it's Instagram, whether it's your followers, now you really have started.
Am I in a bubble? Am I not in a bubble?
Totally. I thought I was in a bubble. Come to find out, it was, you know, it was aluminum foil.
It seemed like it wasn't
Truman
a bubble.
Show.
Now it's
Truman Show, and my whole world around me is fake. And then that starts. But listen, at the end of the day, that starts to come down to who do you surround yourself with?
Exactly, and what brands? And that is when you say DNA to me, at the core level, those brands. What are your values?
Mm-hmm.
If you are going to follow through with that, and now you're basically basing all your marketing and your branding on the influencer and having those Twitter parties or whatever, right?
Yeah.
What other than that superficial sizzle is there to your steak? There is no substance.
Right.
And there's no substance you can claim as your own.
That's the short term.
Exactly.
That's the difference between short term success and long term success.
Well, because the other one is a hell of a lot more investment, and you got to know who the heck you are before you go out there and try to dish it out to somebody else, right?
I would agree. So hold on. So let me talk about that for a moment, because I think when we start, we were talking about the brands and Wayfair and Kinney and whatever, right? But when we start talking about these, you know, we didn't even talk about it yet, but the millennial traveler,
right.
Marriott with Moxie, or Hilton with Canopy or True or whatever they're creating today. Hilton just created a new brand. What's it called? It's a new four-letter word. Gosh darn it. Anyway,
and
I haven't quite figured out who the target audience is yet, but I probably should do a little bit more reading. My point being that all the brands have created, the big brands all created a concept to go after this millennial. But I'll tell you what's happened. In that challenge, you get somebody who is going to be in a city and says, oh, I've got points with Marriott because I earned them at a Courtyard.
Right.
But then I'm going to be in New Orleans and I'm going to spend them at a Moxie because the rate was there and it was a new hotel. And they say, what is this? But I'm a traveler that maybe the Moxie, which is really, really cool. But I'm also kind of in that space age-wise. And I understand it. I understand what they're doing. But if I'm 15 years older, 20 years older than myself, and I've earned those points at a Courtyard, and I go stay at the Moxie in New Orleans or Seattle or Denver or Midtown Manhattan, I don't understand it. And that's one of the big challenges that's happening right now. Whereas with what we're doing with Wayfair and with Kinney, although it might be this youthful...
Thank you.
The bigger thing that we're creating is nostalgia.
Nostalgia, yeah.
But there's an authenticity to it, and there is a rooting to it. That Moxie does not have.
Yeah.
That's a new box with a new skin. Yeah. When you take that property that you're talking about in downtown LA and you say, yeah, you know, historical preservation, stuff like that, right? But you said it yourself. There's story. There is genuineness. Mm-hmm. There is stuff that is we use the term almost like a cliche, ageless, right? There's an agelessness to that. And if you are true and honoring of that, then you have a sustainable product.
Yeah,
right?
Timeless. Timeless would be another word.
And if you then take it to the next level and basically package that and appropriately in an insensitive way introduce it into other locations, but maybe put on the local color of that, then you got something solid.
One of the coolest things that we started noticing in Santa Barbara was, and if you had asked me 3 years ago or asked any of us 3+ years ago, who's your guest, we would have said 25 to 30. What's interesting is the number of retired couples, traveling together. They're coming. They stay at the hotel. They seek it out. It's price conscious. It's value driven. It's people that are saying we want to be near the beach, but we also want to be in something cool.
Yeah.
And you know what's doing that? It's the influencers. It's their grandchildren.
Yep.
These are grandparents that travel with an iPad. These are grandparents that are traveling with an iPad, FaceTiming their grandchildren. The grandchildren are saying, Grandma, Grandpa, you know what's so cool? You got to go do this or you got to go do that. And they're saying, we'll go do that. The older generation today, you know, the 60-year-old travelers today are so much different than the 60-year-old travelers from 25
years
ago. Yes,
we are.
Sorry, Craig. Sorry.
No, wait.
No reason to be sorry.
We talk about this. I have another show that happens before this. It's literally Baby Boomer Focus. I've been doing it for 3 years, right? And one of the things, that first thing that I came across when I started to do that, because I was sort of a crossover sort of with what I do, with the hospitality industry, was the fact that the travel industry, I mean, you talk about baby boomers. Baby boomers, by virtue of just divorce, are 50% divorced, okay? Then you've got the situation where you have surviving spouse or people that maybe never got married. I have an aunt that never got married. She travels and tours all over the place, right? That who they're traveling with, if they are traveling with anybody, to your point and when you're talking about the Wayfair, right? And where they're going. And the accommodations. The cruise industry years ago actually had to go back and relook at their double occupancy model because it no longer applied. And that was their billing model.
Yeah.
Right? Because the people that were, you know, when you talk about cruises, oh, it's that generation, that demographic that's using that a lot, right? They no longer could bill the same way they were structured because the people that were traveling had changed nature. And so I totally get that, what you're saying, and I think the older generation today, the language on aging has completely not been written. If you tell somebody you're, you know, whatever, I mean, they don't even want to be called grandpa and grandma, right? I mean, it's like from that to
new names. Yeah, I do.
There's new names for that.
Right, so the language on aging, how you get older, the productivity, your physical capabilities, your health and well-being, your marital status, your choice of food, diversity of interest, all of that is just wide open canvas.
Yeah.
So that's why it's interesting when I see somebody like you guys who gets that, and that's sort of where your starting point is, regardless of age, and you're basically innovating and disrupting in the field that way, versus somebody that says, oh, shoot, we're missing out on this group here, and everybody else is trying to capture them. We need to somehow get after it. And it just doesn't make
It's the essence of going after psychographic and not just going after that demographic. And if we had built a product that was solely for 25 to 30-year-olds, we would have missed it.
Well, plus, you know what? I think even if you ask an older person, right? So it used to be like you just go live in a retirement community. And you know, Adele Webb or something, and everybody you look out of the window is the same age, driving, you know, the same golf cart and basically spending more time golfing and being bored out of their skulls than anything else, right? Now, if you ask that person in the same age group,
a golf cart? What the hell are you talking
about? They're going to say to you, by the way, you do what I'm about to say, right? You look out of your window, and if everybody you saw out of your window was your same age, you would friggin' move, right? You want people that are younger. You may not want a crying child next door all the time, but you want a diversity.
Sounds like one of my ex-wives. No, I don't.
Right, exactly. So the whole dynamic has changed.
Yeah.
And you really got to understand what that is before you even attempt this. Otherwise, you just end up with a mess.
Yeah, agreed.
Steven, how much time do you spend thinking about being the great innovators or disruptors?
And does it just happen?
Some of it just, you know, does it just happen? Sometimes it does. Listen, let's be...
Being the disruptor?
Well, less the disruptor, I think. I don't think we're ever trying to think about...
Purposely,
right. It's better, like, what's the intent behind something?
Exactly.
And when we're talking about being innovators in the space, we recognize that we have, you know, we've got a responsibility. We have a responsibility being in the hospitality industry.
Community, the associates, your guests, it goes on and on.
It goes on and on.
And you guys have always done a great job with that.
Wow. We have guests that are coming from not only locally, people who are doing staycations, you know, within their own city. We have people coming from all over the world.
Right.
I think we have that responsibility where we say, hey, we got to put, not only as Americans, but as, you know, hoteliers, we have an opportunity to kind of put our best foot forward. We have an opportunity to put our staff, our team members kind of put their best foot forward. So I think when we're doing that, when we're showing the best side of ourselves, really what great hospitality is. It's the service culture that I think the spirit and the culture of Pacifica really shines through in each of our properties, whether it's a 3-star hotel or it's a 4-star hotel. At the end of the day, and I keep using this word, at the end of the day, it's all about that value, because that value prop is different, whether someone's spending $300 a night or whether they're spending $200 a night. You know, value to one person is different to another.
Absolutely.
So being innovators within that, where we continue to strive to create value, you know, breakfast is one of those, God, like, complimentary breakfast. But, like, if we could just tell everybody stop giving away complimentary breakfast, we'd all be better. It's not going to happen overnight. No. It's not going to happen overnight. But it's something that we're talking. It's something that we're looking for.
Conversations.
Well, there's also an educational component, right?
That's
both to your staff, to your operational side, to the people that are staying there. You know, there's a normalcy and a and a habitual kind of way of traveling. And if you're going to introduce something that's new, you got to be sensitive how you do it, and you got to give it the time.
That's right. That's right. In terms of being disruptors in the space, I think as long as we continue to be, listen, we're very creative internally. We've got a great team of people, you know, on back in the office who are constantly thinking of how do we create something different for that guest, where that guest is, create that aha moment, that memorable moment when they're in that guest room. We were some of the earliest people to start putting Alexas and the Echo Dots. And I mean, we just saw Marriott yesterday talking about putting Alexas in guest rooms. And we had people on our team saying, we need to be putting Echo Dots in all the rooms. And we had so many of us saying, no, we're not going to do that. But gosh, when you've got Marriott like being like the quintessential
affirmation,
like, you know what? They were onto something. Yeah. And it wasn't perfect science. It wasn't perfect science. Sometimes they would work, but the intent was there.
Well, I think that also gets back to, you know, being the innovator and the disruptor. You know, there's a lot of cases where that line is blurred.
Mm-hmm.
One becomes the other. If you are on the top of your game,
it's true.
Your hotel is got everything going for it, from that initial touch point where the guest gets out of their car, through the front desk, to their room, and they love it, and they're out. You have now become the disruptor in the area. So
yeah.
So when was the last aha moment?
Gosh, the last
probably this morning
moment?
When he had a staff meeting.
The last aha moment.
So that for you was an aha moment.
Jeez, okay.
Can I give you a softball while you think about that one?
There's lots of there's lots of moments that for me are often not necessarily aha moments, but it's that affirmation like, we're doing the right thing.
That's an aha moment.
We're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Like, just because this might be normal to us, this isn't normal to everybody else.
No.
And so there's always kind of that moment in hospitality when you're reading through TripAdvisor and people are saying, you know, great things about the staff, or the other side of that, when people are, but you're always proud about how your team responds to it. You're proud when a front desk host is recognized. You're like, they're doing exactly what, you know, that's so great. I'm glad that they were doing that. They're going the extra mile. They're getting outside their comfort zone. They're stepping away from the desk to go help a guest, to go do something, working outside their job description, their quote-unquote job description, which I think for any good hotelier, you've got to do that.
Yeah.
If you can't be anticipatory if you don't know what it means to step outside of that, you know,
you're in the wrong business.
So when you see a guest comment about something like that, that's always like, yes.
Yeah.
The staff is
they're paying attention.
They care. They're taking on the responsibility of what it means to be, you know, to provide service to somebody. And then on the flip side, maybe we have a service recovery, and you love seeing how a general manager or a front office manager responds and gets back. Because listen, we're not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
None of us are trying to pretend that we're perfect. What we're doing is we're trying to be, you know, how do we react? Because that's really, at the end of the day, that's what we're doing. We are reacting in real time, 24/7 in hotels.
You'd mentioned the staycation earlier.
Hmm?
How important is leisure travel to you and to the industry, do you think?
I read something recently that said that 60% of all business travel is
going towards bleisure. Yeah. 60%, which means that it says that for business travel where there's two, if they're staying for 2 to 3 nights, they are, there's a 50% chance that they are going to extend and that that's going to turn into a leisure travel. That's huge. That's huge. That's huge for our hotels, some of which are big, some of which are small, some of which are in leisure destinations, some of which are in corporate destinations, because that means that, that their spouse or their partner is traveling along with them. And now not only are they paying on their company card, and it's extending beyond just the freebie rubber chicken that's being put on by the conference. It's now saying they're going to eat and they're going to dine with us. They're going to drink with us. They're going to extend beyond that.
Exactly.
And now we've got a converted guest. Mm-hmm. The person who chooses to stay, right? I mean, there's the one thing when the, you know, the company's putting the bill.
Right.
It, there's like less of an emotional decision. There's more of a, I stay there because I know I'm going to, that's the efficiency travel. But now when you have a choice to stay and you're bringing your significant other along with you, and now it becomes real.
Yeah.
And now it's,
and you're doing it on the tail end of a business trip.
And now it's real. Now it's your significant other who's now almost judging you. So you're like, this is going to be great.
I got to step up my game.
That's huge. Yeah. And now they're staying at the places that you stay at. They're eating the food, doing the things that you do. That's kind of a fun experience, you know. I think for people, and you're starting to see more and more. And that's not just here in the United States. That's in other countries throughout the world as well. And I think you're going to start to see that grow. Now, I will say this, and I'm looking at it. I was reading the report, and I was thinking, okay, why?
Yeah.
Why is it over 60% right now? Times are good. So let's go back to what happens if we're taking a dip. Is that happening where people are staying 2 to 3 nights? What happens when people are staying just 1 to 2 nights? What happens when people stop spending the night?
It'll go.
That number changes. That 60% comes down dramatically. But that's one of those reflections of what happens when times are good.
Sure.
Well, we used to see this at, let's use the lodging conference as an example. Okay, it's one of the premier hotel conferences, in, you know, certainly in the nation, if not globally.
Yeah.
Okay. Harry Javers and his team do a great job.
And they pick a great hotel.
Yeah. Prior to the meltdown. Okay, I would get to the Arizona Biltmore on Monday, okay, and I would stay through Saturday night. Mm. Conference starts on Tuesday, ends on Thursday. I've got clients that the only time I'm going to see them during the year is that Monday through Thursday, and they brought their families out for the weekend before, if they're from the East Coast, and the West Coast. They would have their families come out
meet them
on Thursday and stay through the weekend. So we'd all be there, you know, for both weekends. Mm-hmm. During the meltdown, that stopped.
Yeah.
Did not come back subsequently. You know? So I think, you know, as much as I like the idea of leisure travel, and I think now I know my family hates traveling with me because I start pulling the hotels apart as soon as I walk into the lobby. You know, I'm turning furniture over.
That's the sign of a real hotelier right there.
Yeah. And girlfriends that I used to take to the back end of the conferences, it's like, no, you don't come in till the night that it ends. Because I've got, I cannot be with you during the week. I have to be with the clients. So, but I know that that you know, as two incomes go to one, and when corporate travel pulls in the reins, I remember being at a publicly held company. And they said, okay, you're a vice president. Everybody from vice president down, you will now be staying at Courtyards and Hamptons and those things. Everybody from a senior vice president up that's been staying at JW Marriott's, full service Marriott's and all that, you're going to go to the full service Marriott's and Hilton's and Hyatt's only. That's it. No more Ritz-Carlton's, no more anything. And that's pretty standard operating procedure, especially on the publicly held side where you've got, okay, you lost money this quarter. You've got a quarter to make it up, and if you don't, bring in a new team. Mm-hmm. So, it's you know, I think bleisure is going to be really good when we've got a great market.
Yeah,
but it's going to be one of those things that just evaporates quickly.
It might still have some seasonal aspect because of finite amount of time that people have.
Yeah, I think so too, and I think you know spouses can only put up with. Spouses can only put up with their partners traveling so much. After a certain while, you know, after a while, it was, you know, evidenced by my wife joined me out for NYU this last go around.
Nice.
She was not going to put up with me going to New York one more time if she wasn't able to make the trip. and she got to see things in New York that I've never even seen before. So that was so great. You know, she got to see the city, you know, from one of those double decker tour buses and go around and see things that I've still not seen. That was, you know, a little bit of envy, a little bit of envy on my part. But I was like, that's so great. It was so great for her to be able to do that. And but kind of like nail on the head with that one, you know, where she was unable to experience something that I haven't. But that's what happens on these business trips.
Wow.
You know, we eat well, we stay well. But for 15 hours a day, we are talking hotel shop.
Nonstop.
This is what we're doing.
It is work at a very nice hotel with some good food that you rush through.
And I need disinfectant hand wipes. You know, I need wipes in my bag. I need Ricola to soothe my throat, because when I get home, I'm done. My hand hurts. I can't talk. Yeah. It's a lot of these things are a lot of work. So they great are. When they're able to be there with you to see it. To hear about it each night when you come home.
That it is true.
This is actually happening.
That's right. Yeah.
Hey, we're in the downside of this, and I know you've got a meeting coming up soon. So I wanted to touch on one more thing, actually two more things with you. With the Fed raising their interest rates for the second time this year, how does something like that impact your ability to grow your portfolio? And where are you sourcing funds? Now, I know you're going to say Ned DeLorme, and we get a referral point on that. So,
you know, I touched on this briefly earlier as well. You know, we're in a fortunate spot where the company's been around for 45 years. Invest West, which is our investment arm of the company, and has been around for a long, long time. We have some great relationship lenders. We're also, as a sponsor and as a borrower, we're also very strong in that sense. We used to have a great relationship with a bank that's no longer around. So those days back, you know, time ago, as we were originally from Santa Barbara. We had a great relationship with a lender, and that lender was acquired, you know, through the massive consolidation of banking. But it was a necessary thing, as we all know.
Yeah.
And so times have changed, but we've realigned ourselves with some other great relationship lenders. Listen, I think what's going to happen when you see Feds raising rates is this kind of, again, these necessary corrections. Yeah. At the top of the hour, we talked about developers developing hotels who may not have any business developing properties, people buying hotels who maybe didn't. What this does is this forces people, both smaller shops, medium-sized shops, as well as the REITs, to be chasing that yield. You gotta buy right. Evan, every single time you
have to. Puts more pressure on it being done correctly.
It absolutely does. And listen, there is cheaper capital out there. There always will be. Mm-hmm. And for a good sponsor, they'll be able to obtain an interest rate. Right. Regardless of whether it's being CMBS or, you know, recourse, non-recourse, I think there's always going to be good money out there for people who are worthy of it.
Yeah.
And for people who are willing to pay a little bit more, you know, that money's going to be there as well.
As well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So in terms of from our position and how we kind of will continue to grow, we're going to continue to utilize those resources and those relationships that we have in the space, because we've refinanced with some pretty large banks in the past and some hefty portfolio refinancings. We'll always be able to tap that well as long as those guys are there. Mm-hmm. Fortunate to have those relationships. And then on the one-off hotels, whether it be local, regional, or whether it be relationship with we don't like to give out our lenders. I don't want you to. Sorry for people keep waiting for me to give out a lender. We don't do that.
No, but you can come to the California Lodging Investment Conference on March 7th of next year at the Westin South Coast Plaza to get lenders. So, yeah, I don't want you giving yours away.
So. You might be luckier then. Yeah. And what was your other question, Greg?
Your portfolio right now, how many do you own? How many are you managing?
So of the 36 hotels in the portfolio right now, 26 are owned and operated, 10 are managed third party, and you're going to start to, you'll continue to see that change. When I was brought on to Pacifica now 3.5 years ago, we only had a few third party hotels. Part of me coming on board was to continue to grow that third party platform that we had, that the company had already started. They had already invested in the people, invested in the resources and the technology to kind of have this, you know, this backbone, this centrally located backbone, everything from accounting to ops to sales to marketing to people services, you name it. I mean, we literally have a team and a discipline in place for every single one. But to grow that in the third party space, growing through with relationship clients where we're not just doing one-offs here and there. Of course, we have those, but growing with larger groups where we're servicing these groups that have, you know, half a dozen hotels. And that's kind of the long-term plan there. You know, I think if we're continuing to grow, and we, I think the number, it's about 4 hotels a year. Last year we did 6, so we're fully well and capable of doing that. But yeah, that's...
Well, it's your passion. It's in your DNA.
That's right.
So
that's right.
That's part of the fun side.
If we're taking, you know, if we're buying, let's say we're buying 2 hotels a year and we're taking on 2 hotels a year, third party management, that's kind of a great mix for us.
Yeah. Good for you guys.
Yeah, well, it's steady growth, and you keep your hand in, and you're still engaged and involved, and you're not growing to a point where you're basically more distant.
I don't think that will ever happen. As you know, it very much still a family company. You know,
right.
the Marquis family is Dale Marquis, the patriarch of the family, and his, you know, 3 of his sons are running the company today, and but also with a great, so that's on kind of on the Best West and the Pacifica Hotel side, within a great group of people who just bleed company, and the culture runs very, very thick. You have people who have been there for 20 plus years.
And you got a beautiful new office.
And a great new,
got your
coffee mug. It's in my office.
There you go. Very good.
And, but yeah, we got great new offices down in Orange County now. We brought the entire shop from Santa Barbara to Orange County, which really kind of feels like we're now at the center of the universe, which is fun. Santa Barbara's a beautiful place. I grew up, having grown up there, myself, you know, it's a beautiful place to live. It started to become a challenge in our space where you have rising minimum wage, and you have rising costs and talent, shallow labor pool up there in the Central Coast Santa Barbara.
Yep.
And to be able to recruit the type of talent that you need.
You needed to be down here.
You talk about technology, you know, you need sharp people.
Yeah.
And being down in Orange County really put us at that epicenter to be able to recruit the best.
Yeah. Is there anybody you want to say hi to? We're going to wrap it up.
Oh, gosh. Carly and the kids are going to be watching this on YouTube, I understand. So hi to you guys. Daddy's famous. So my kids, who really only watch YouTube, which is crazy. You got 500 channels at home and the kids immerse themselves in YouTube. I don't get it.
Funny thing is, I do. I get more entertainment out of YouTube than I do anything else.
Entertains the rest of us with it.
I'm ready to cut the cord. And of course, anybody else watching back from the office, you know, they really, the guys who keep the Pacifica train going. It's been a lot of fun.
You had a great team over there. Thank you for
joining us
today.
Absolutely, guys.
Want to have you back post-opening of the Wayfair, and we're looking forward to more about that. Today's show was brought to you by Park West General Contractors. Ed and Chris, thank you very much. And also Rod Gantos and Associates, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm going to say hi to my grandson. Hi, Chase. Grandpa will be home later tonight. Give me a call. It's been a great show. I really appreciate you coming.
Maybe we should do a remote when they open.
Well, we need to talk to Paul about that. See what see what we can do. So, thank you very much, and we will see you in 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks.
Thank you. Aloha.
Thank you for being our guest today on Check Out California. We look forward to having you as a guest with us again in 2 weeks. Until then, you can always reach us through our Check Out California Facebook page or by emailing us at checkoutcalifornia@gmail.com. We love hearing from you, so do let us know what you think of the show and what areas of interest you'd like to see us cover in the future. Your feedback is very important to us as we continue to bring you the best hospitality our Golden State has to offer. Until next time, may all your days be filled with sunsets and palm trees. Now, go experience and check out California.